For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right. Well, as he passed by, Jesus is still down in Jerusalem. This is right after that business where he was teaching at the temple, so this is probably right outside the temple grounds in the city. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" Okay, what a creepy question. Why would they say that? You know, they're reflecting the belief system that they were raised in. This is what rabbinic Judaism taught at this time. They believed that if you were, you know, physically disabled in some way, that you deserved that. It was kind of like in karmic law in Hinduism, you know, if somebody's poor, if they're disabled, that's because they deserve that. That's their bad karma that caused that to happen. Of course, the difference is, in Judaism, there is no reincarnation, so there is no previous life in which you sinned. And so it raised significant problems when you show up with a case like this. It'd be one thing if this guy became blind, you know, at 15 or something. Then you could say, well, you just committed too many sins, so God struck him blind. But what about this kid? He was born that way. So how can it be the product of sin if he's born that way? Of course, and let me just stress, if you're new here, none of this is true, okay? This is all wrong. Every bit of it's wrong. But this is what they taught. And you can tell that the disciples knew this discussion. They're reflecting that point of view. In the Talmud, we have the debates of the rabbis preserved on this question of illness caused by sin. Some rabbis argued that the parents sinned, and then God punished them by giving them a blind child. Other rabbis retorted, no, because passages like this one in Ezekiel 18, the soul who sins is the one who will die. The son will not share the guilt of the father. No, where the father shared the guilt of the son, the righteousness of the righteous man will be recorded to him, the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against him. And so they're like, see, that's impossible. You can't, God is not going to put on the son something that the father did. So then they're like, okay, so what's your explanation? And they're like, what about prenatal sin? You know, I mean, that sounds crazy. Sin, this baby sinned while he was in his mother's womb. Yeah, that's what they came up with. And you can see from the question that the disciples ask, who sinned, this man or his parents? They're familiar with this debate. This was what was going on. This was the discussion. Prenatal sin. Well, that just sounds so crazy. You know, it's like, how could anyone believe in something like that? And yet, you see that the logic of the system requires it. You know, there's basically, what's the other alternative? And so this is really a poignant kind of example of some of the negative effects that we can get from false belief systems. They're not benign. It's not that the only thing that matters is that you choose to believe, you know, what you choose to believe, and it doesn't matter what the content is. The content does matter. And imagine being this guy, raised and being told, you know, too bad you're blind. I guess you shouldn't have committed that sin in the womb. It's so cruel. It's so uncompassionate. And yet, here's where we end up in human-based religious thinking. It's sometimes pretty vicious, really, in its conclusions. Well, Jesus, of course, rejected all of this, neither this man or his parents, he said. It was in order that, they said, the reason we're here right now is in order that the works of God might be displayed in him. This is what's going to happen. And Jesus is lining up. He's going to heal this guy. And so he says to the crowd, while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So here we are right back in the previous chapter, right? And Jesus is basically announcing to the public, watch this, because I'm going to do something, and it's going to be illustrating this point right here. Remember when we started John, I said that these semeia, these symbolic acts of Jesus, are interpreted metaphorically because Jesus authorizes them to be interpreted that way, right? And so hermeneutically, if the textual cues are showing us this is intended to be a metaphor, then we're not reading into it when we see a metaphor there. And so here, you clearly see that Jesus is signaling, watch this, and it has something to do with me being the light of the world. Imagine a guy born blind. He sees darkness. That's what's in front of his eyes, nothing. And so to get your eyesight, boom! Well, and that is an illustration of the enlightening effect that you get when you come to God and you have God come into your life. It has this amazing enlightening effect on your life. Well, first comes the strange part. So when he said this, he gets down on the, and here he is back in the dirt again. Spat in the clay and the dirt and makes a ball of gook and says, here, and smears that in the guy's eye. I remember reading this as a young believer, and I'm just like, oh my, holy crap, I can't believe this. And it wasn't only, not only because it's unsanitary, but also because now, doesn't it bother you a little bit to think it's almost reminds you of like a witch doctor, someone putting some crazy poultice on, you know, some superstitious thought that here we'll rub some mud on them, maybe that'll make them better. And then, this was very bothersome to me. But then I went and hit the commentaries, and I also read the rest of the passage and started to realize what was going on here. This is all very purposeful, as we'll see. He says, then go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated scent. And so he went away and he washes his eyes, and all of a sudden he can see. And he comes back, he's walking out in the street, and this guy has his sight. Well, the neighbors, therefore, and those who previously saw him as a beggar were saying, whoa, isn't this the one who used to sit out here begging? Jerusalem was not a big city like it is today. Back at this time, Jerusalem had less than 50,000 people. You're talking about a city the size of Johnstown, if you've ever been there. Smaller by far than Worthington, okay? So people there and know each other. And a public guy is sitting in the square begging for however many years, I take it 20, 30 years at least. Yeah, everyone was used to seeing that guy there. They're like, wait a minute, that's him. Some were saying, this is him, but others were saying, no, it looks like him. That can't be him. The dude himself, I'm the one, he says. So people are, of course, looking for other explanations. They're shocked. And therefore, when they were saying to him, well, how did your eyes get opened? He answered, a man called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes. He said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went away, I washed, and received my sight. And they said, well, where is he? I don't know. So Jesus had wandered off again. Well, they brought him to the Pharisees. You got to come and tell the leaders about this. Now, the Pharisees would be the leaders of the local, you know, synagogues. And they were kind of the religious authority there, and most respected leaders and rabbis. They bring him in here, and we read in 14, now it was the Sabbath on the day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Well. So this is what it's about. No, this is why he made the clay and smeared it. Because Jesus knows their system of teaching. He knows their teaching quite well. in the rabbinic laws, we find one reference that teaches against spitting on a dirt floor on the Sabbath. Why? Because if the spit hits it and rolls, it would leave a little furrow behind. And objectively speaking, that's basically plowing your field. The same argument, that's why you can't drag a chair across the floor, you have to pick it up and set it down, because that would make a furrow on the dirt floor. Also, making clay and kneading clay was against the law on the Sabbath. So, and they take these Sabbath laws very seriously. So two things that Jesus has done here that he knew would set up this contradiction. And he's basically purposefully set this up, just like he did with the man by the pool of Bethesda. He's setting up these legalistic teachers for confrontation. Well, the Pharisees are asking him, and how did this happen? And he said, he applied clay to my eyes and I washed. Now I see, oh, clay. And their heads are like, clay? Are you kidding? And so some of the Pharisees are saying, well, this man's not from God. He's not keeping the Sabbath. How could he be from God? Because he made a blind man see? Maybe. But that just won't fit in this system. This is actually kind of a God-tight system. Others were saying, wait a minute. How can a man who's a sinner perform such signs? That went against their theology, too. So they're saying, oh, he's a loser, he doesn't keep the Sabbath, he's a sinner, he's a godless man. And yet, their own theology also taught that God won't answer the prayers of godless people and sinners. So, a little internal contradiction here. And we read, there arose a division among them. This is exactly the division that Jesus had anticipated and why he set it up this way. These internal contradictions of legalism are going to break it into pieces. And, you know, sorry about the spit, but had to happen. They said, therefore, to the blind man again, okay, now, what do you say about him since he opened your eyes? The guy's like, he must be a prophet. He's a holy man. He's something, you know, I don't know. He's a healer. The Jews, therefore, did not believe it of him, that he had been blind, and they received his sight until they called the parents of the very one who had received sight. They go down, they get this guy's parents. Everyone knows who they are, and they go down, they fetch him up. Of course, they're part of the synagogue there. And they question him. They said, is this your son who you say was born blind? And then how does he see? What's your explanation? They're like, well, we know this is our son. We know that he was born blind. But how he sees, we don't know about that. And, you know, who opened his eyes, we don't know that either. Ask him. He's of age. He can speak for himself. And so there's kind of this is a little bit of a strange response. I mean, on the one hand, yes, that's our kid and everything. And yet, what is it with the, I don't know, there's sort of a detached air, I guess, in the way they're answering. And John explains that in the next verse. He says his parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, because they had already agreed that if anyone would confess Jesus to be the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. And for this reason, his parents are like, ask him, he's of age. We don't want to talk about it. Oh. And so here we are, back with the texts we were studying last week. Remember when Jesus said, the light came in, but men loved darkness rather than the light. They refuse to accept the light. They don't want to come out into the light. And so basically this light that is being shown here in a figurative sense is going to be gradually moving the one dude, the blind guy, toward faith, and some other people too. Some of the people saw this for what it was, they believe. Others, it's going to be hardening them in their resistance. You can see the cynicism of a closed mind in this policy. which people apparently knew that anyone who confesses Jesus as the Messiah is going to be out of the synagogue, excommunicated. That means permanently rejected from their own faith community there. It's a pretty serious matter. And so there was never any consideration, and never for a moment considered the possibility that this might be actually true. That Jesus, maybe we should reconsider, or maybe this guy is from God. Maybe we're in the wrong here. That never happened. They were already completely closed in their mind and just trying to bait people into, so, who do you think this Jesus is? What do you think? I'm out of here. That's all they're waiting for, to catch him and so they can throw him out. So they bring the guy back in. This is like a courtroom trial. They bring in the parents and they're like, get out of here. Get that guy back in here. They bring him back in. So a second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, now give glory to God. We know this man's a sinner. Now what's the real truth here? And he therefore says, look, whether he's a sinner, I don't know. One thing I do know, whereas I was blind, now I can see. So this guy is apparently not even a Christian believer at this point. He becomes a believer later. And yet he's already doing a pretty good job at apologetics. You know, that's a pretty hard argument to overthrow. You say he's a sinner? How come I can see right now? Good question. Well, that works for us too, that same argument, by the way. Some people feel like, well, I can't back up, you know, the authorship and date of all the books of the Bible. I can't explain all of the archaeological backing for the things we believe in there. I can't back up the resurrection argument. Look, how about this argument right here? I used to be a messed up bucket of crap, and now my life has totally come together because of Christ. That's not that hard to argue that. And it's pretty persuasive. That's a pretty hard argument to answer, frankly. Well, they said, oh, what did he do to you? Let's hear that part about how he did it again. And he's like, he smearing on. This is a condensed account, of course. But, you know, it's clear. They're just like, so that's it then. He made clay. He's like, I already told you what he did. You didn't listen then. Why? Why do you want to hear it again? He says, you don't want to become his disciples, do you? And, of course, this just totally sets them off. They just reviled him. Ah-ha! You're his disciple. We're the disciple of Moses. And we know that God's spoken to Moses. As for this guy, we don't know where he's from. We don't know anything about him. And the guy comes right back again. Yeah, so this is an amazing thing. You don't know where he's from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not hear sinners. If anyone's God-fearing and does his will, he hears him. Well, that's not actually true, what the guy's saying here. What he's doing is he's feeding their own teaching right back to them. You know, according to your own doctrine, because that's what they believe. They believe that whether God would listen to your prayers had to do with how good your works were. If you were a righteous good do-gooder, then God would listen to you. But if you were a sinner, no, he would not. In fact, this is not really true. This was part of the false theology they were teaching that was works or legalistically based, where acceptance by God has to do with climbing a ladder of works and doing good to get to God. The truth is that when we pray to God, we can only come to him in faith, not in good deeds. But this has the effect of, he's saying, by your own theology, and he's right here, God won't listen to somebody that's not following him and doesn't, only if he is. Since the beginning of time, it's never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. Yeah, I don't know whether that's even still happened. I know they feel they're maybe coming close, but I'm not sure it's even happened to this day. Sure, it's never happened in the ancient world. And so we're looking at something here that is so striking, so shatter it to any other theory. There's really only one conclusion to reach. And he says, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And he is correct on that statement. He wouldn't be able to open the eyes of a man born blind. That is divine power there. That's a miracle. Well, they answered to him, you were born entirely in sins, and you're going to teach us. And they threw him out. And so he was kicked out of the synagogue. And by the way, if you see here in 34, they confirm this, what I was arguing earlier, that the rabbis taught that if you were born blind, that meant you're born in sin. And you see it right there. And they use that to discredit him. You're going to teach us you were born in sin. You were born blind, fool. Get out of here. And they threw him out. Well, yeah. Jesus heard they had put him out of the synagogue, and so he looks him up. And finally he says, catches up with him. He says, do you believe in the Son of Man? His term for himself. He's talking about himself. The guy answered him and says, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? This use of Lord carry here doesn't necessarily mean that he believed in Jesus' divinity. It means they could use that word for humans too, sir. That was a respectful greeting. And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and he's the one who's talking to you right now. You're looking at him. And we read that he said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. A word, proskuneomir, means he threw himself on the ground. It's to prostrate yourself. And that's what he did. And so the dude comes to faith. This obviously was not a faith healing. The faith came after the healing in this case, which is not that unusual. You see that happen from time to time where God will perform a miracle. He'll send an answer to prayer. He'll send a dream. He'll make himself, manifest himself in some way, even to people that really don't know him at all, as a way to get them interested in getting kind of the rest of the story. And that's what happened with this guy. Well, Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. Now, he's kind of announcing this to the crowd. So the crowd is gathered again. And so he gives kind of this riddle here, sort of a little riddle. And I think what we have to imagine and supply here is that it's those who do not see may see, like this guy, and those who think they see can become blind. And so we're starting to come down to the punchline of this whole story, the point. Because those are the Pharisees who were standing there. They're like, oh, we're not blind. I know you're not saying we're blind, right? And Jesus listened to his answer. Here's the punchline of the story. If you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say we see, your sin remains. Oh. Wow, that's heavy. See, before you can accept a gift from God, the gift of grace, you have to admit that you need it. You know, before you can accept forgiveness, why would you accept forgiveness if you felt like you were already have it together and that there's nothing wrong with you? And so we come down to kind of the big picture of this story. On the one hand, we have a blind man. He's just a simple guy. He's walking around. He can't see. Boy, would that be a drag. You know, to be born blind, that's a real heavy burden to bear. And so he's, you know, he's obviously not sophisticated. The Pharisees, on the other hand, they think they have it all together. Think of the story of the Pharisee and the publican. Remember that? Jesus said two men went down to pray to the temple. One of them, the Pharisee, stands up and his prayer is, oh God, I thank you that I'm not a sinner like other people. Boy, is he out of touch. Yeah? And he goes through and articulates all of his deeds. I pray several times a day. I fast 3 times a week. I give a tenth of all I have, you know, so my works. And so I just thank you, God, that I'm not a sinner. Like that guy. And he points over to the tax collector. And the tax collector's over there, oh, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus says, that second man goes down to his house justified, acquitted, accepted, rather than the first, the guy that thought he had it together. It's really that last line in the story tonight, isn't it? That's it. If people admit their need, then Jesus offers light. And he'll be a light, offer you, he lets you see, have this opening of the eyes. But if people feel they already have it together, basically Jesus is like, I have nothing for you. Go your way. You're awesome. It'd be amazing to be like you. Too bad you and me can't get together. And so we have the heart, the point of this passage, which is, how would you like to have your eyes opened? This guy, this blind person, is a picture of the human race. That's you, according to this story. This passage is claiming that all of humanity fit the description of this guy, that you, me, we're blind. We come in and we're in darkness. Last week we were using the following Jesus' expression, walking in darkness. That's the way we are. And according to this passage, we could be missing something amazing, having the light suddenly turned on. Boy, there was this movie, I think it was back in the 90s, called Blink. You ever seen that? Madeline Stowe. It's pretty good if you want to like watching older movies. In it, she is blind, born blind, or maybe she became blind as a baby or something, but she's blind. And they have done research, and they found a way to transplant a cornea or whatever it was in there, and they believe that there's a chance she could get her sight back as an adult. So they have this scene where they do the surgery and everything, and they unwrap the bandages and take them off. And she, of course, and I think she's a great actress, but boy, to see for the first time, what would that be like? It really made me think about it for a long time after, just imagining what that would be like to have your whole life, you know, in blindness, and then all of a sudden to see. And what a beautiful world we live in, you know. Can you imagine never having seen any of this? Can you imagine, you know, trying, like if you had a friend who was born blind and they're like, so what's it like to have your sight? You'd be, now I can't even explain it. I can't explain that at all. Let's see, the color blue is like, it's different than red. I mean, there's just no, you know, it's like you got to experience this. You got to see this in order to comprehend what it is. And man, what a far out thing, a blessing that would be to just open your eyes and finally be able to see, and to see how spectacular the world is, and beauty all around us. That is being used in this passage as a comparison for what it's like to have God come into your life. It's mind-blowing. And it's a little bit more gradual usually than it was with this guy. We also don't need to do the bit with the mud. So that's cool. But we have to turn to God, and we have to basically open ourselves to have this gift given to us. You know, we have to admit that we need the gift, which is what he was saying. If you said you were blind, then your sin, you would have no sin. I'd take your sin away. But since you say we see, your sin remains. If we're too proud to admit, I need forgiveness, I need to have this gift of life, then then God can't do anything. He's not going to force it on us. God made us as high-level free will beings, and he respects that. So if our decision is, I'm not sure I want this, then the answer is going to be fine. Suit yourself. But Jesus said in Revelation 3:20, behold, I stand at the door and knock, and if anyone opens the door, I'll come in and dine with him and he with me. So this is as far as he's going to go, as the offer is there. I can open your eyes. You will have an experience of enlightenment. You will see things. You'll see life in a way you've never seen before. It's quite amazing, really, to start to have this perspective. It's really the point of view of God break in on you. It's the presence of the Holy Spirit speaking to you, showing you things, opening your eyes to see things. It's real. So this is something you should think about, especially if you have never specifically invited Jesus into your life. Maybe you're sitting here tonight because he has brought you here so that you can hear this offer, and that you have the chance now to just between you and him, because it's in the heart. You know, it's not something, he sees exactly what you're thinking, and you can just turn to him and say, yeah, God, I want to see this. I want my eyes open. And this will become the greatest night of your life if you do that. We'll give a chance for you to pray later, but right now we'll just draw the line there. Oh yeah, next week Jesus teaches about he says he's the good shepherd, and it's in a whole different dimension of leadership and what leadership looks like under the biblical paradigm.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.